The big clock on the wall ticked round to 5 o'clock, and Lister lifted up the flap on the counter and turned the sign on the door to closed. Bailey's Perfect Chamois Kebab Emporium was shutting for the day. He grabbed his overcoat and scarf, pulled on his fur-lined deerstalker and mittens, and walked out into the crisp, white snow. The bell on the door jangled behind him. There was never any need to lock the shop, not here in Bedford Falls. Lister crunched across the eiderdown street and headed for the bank. A group of carol singers were standing round the war memorial, belting out God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen.
Merry Christmas, he said, and dropped $2 into their can. It being after 5 o'clock and Christmas Eve, the bank was closed, of course. Lister tried the door. It jangled open.
Hello? Anybody home? Horace, are you there?
Horace stepped through the back door, holding a sheet of wrapping paper and some string.
Sorry, Mr. Bailey. I was just wrapping presents for the kids up at the orphan home. You ever try to wrap a hula hoop? I'll be a monkey's uncle if I can figure it.
Lister smiled and pulled out a handful of candy sticks from his huge overcoat pocket.
I didn't have time to wrap them. Hope the orphanage doesn't mind.
They won't mind, George. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Horace,
said Lister, and walked back out into the street, where his rickety old Model A Ford was covered in snow. He took the hand crank from the bench seat and jerked the engine into spluttering life. As he turned left at Martini's Bar, his arms started to hurt again, so he pulled over outside Old Man Gower's drugstore. His arms had been giving him problems for a few weeks now. It was like a burning sensation down both his forearms, excruciatingly painful at times, but Doc McKenzie couldn't find anything wrong with them. There were no marks, nothing showed up on the X-ray. It was a complete mystery. He grabbed a tub of cooling ointment from Old Man Gower's shelves and dropped 25 cents into the open till, then hopped back in his old Ford and headed for home. It had been 2 years since they returned to Earth, 2 years since they'd skidded to a landing in the middle of the Sahara Desert. As they'd opened the airlock and stepped out into the baking heat, an army of jeeps and helicopters had descended on them. The world's press went crazy. The 3 million-year-old men. Space adventurers. Rimmer lapped it up. The cat adored it, but Lister just wanted to get away. He changed his name to George Bailey and opted for the peaceful anonymity of a backwater town in the American Midwest. He couldn't believe it when he discovered there actually was a town called Bedford Falls. He'd gone there on a whim to take a look, and was stunned by how similar the place was to the Bedford Falls in the movie It's a Wonderful Life. It seemed like fans of the film had all collected there to live out their lives in a self-created 1940s American Shangri-La. But something was wrong with his arms, and it was beginning to worry him. He turned the Ford into the tree-lined drive of his old house and honked his horn 3 times. The snow lay thick and deep on the lawn, and a huge 8-foot snowman was grinning a welcome in coal. He walked into the parlor. A log fire was burning merrily in the grate. Jim and Bexley were smashing Silent Night out of the complaining piano, while Chrissy was standing on a stepladder, putting tinsel on the Christmas tree. When the kids were in bed, they sat snoozily in the big leather armchair with the springs poking through the back, watching the fire splutter and splurt, and listening to Hoagy Carmichael on the wind-up phonograph. After Chrissy climbed the stairs to their draughty bedroom with a leaky roof, he took out the ointment. He didn't want her to know about his arms, and began to apply it to the sore areas. It came as something of a shock that, when he'd put the cream specifically on the areas that throbbed and hurt, it spelt out a word written in pain down his forearm. The word was dying. The black stretch Mercedes with the tinted bulletproof glass glided along the Champs-Élysées and pulled up outside the canopy of the 140-floor skyscraper. Rimmer finished his phone call to his publicist, then stepped out of the limo. A string of bodyguards kept at bay the group of teenage girls who'd camped out on the steps overnight in the hope of catching a glimpse of AJR. He allowed them a thin smile as he walked under the canopy and up the marble steps into the Rimmer Building, Paris. The Rimmer Building, Paris, was an identical copy of the Rimmer Building, London, and the Rimmer Building, New York. He walked across the massive lobby and nodded almost imperceptibly at Pierre, the Sorbonne graduate he'd hired exclusively to press the button that summoned the lift. The lift took a full 90 seconds to arrive, so he fired Pierre and pressed the button himself for floor 140, his luxury penthouse suite. The fact that he can actually press the button at all was, in a way, the key to the immense fortune he'd amassed since his return to Earth 2 years previously. After the hero's welcome, his cunning business brain had taken full advantage of the offers which flooded in daily. With the money he culled from advertising and the publication of his memoirs, he'd set up the Rimmer Research Centre, which had finally invented the SolidGram, a solid body that housed his personality and intellect. He was now exactly like any normal living person, with the added bonus that he was more or less immortal. The SolidGram had sold in such quantities, his income from that alone allowed him to buy the Bahamas for somewhere to go at weekends. It amused him no end that he was now one of the three or four richest men in the world, while Lister was stuck in a dead-end burger bar in a dead-end town somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Rimmer was now well into the complicated negotiations to buy up the entire town, which he intended to turn into a huge maggot farm. Just for the hell of it.